said.
Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No,
I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
Boswell. And Boswell is 2 for 2. Boswell trying to go 3 for 3. Which he does. This is a 45-yard field goal attempt. And Boswell has accounted for all of the scoring. Barely called any of their names. 43-yard attempt. And for Chris Boswell, he has just tied an NFL postseason record. 5 field goals. So a 43-yard attempt, if he makes it, it'll be the most field goals in any postseason game in NFL history. And he is able to bang it through. How about Chris Boswell? There have been over 500 postseason games, 534, in the history of the league. It's the first time somebody's made more than
that. Time of the week again is Sports Hawks episode number 128. Oh, there's the train whistle, which means, and you heard how clear it was.
We're right here together. We're live together on the Sunset Strip. At the time of recording, we're together.
And which is, you know, it's always a good time to be here in the Casa.
You, like the Chargers, have moved up to Los Angeles.
I have. It's nice. And I don't blame the Chargers. It's the weather up here. It's a little bit warmer in the summertime.
Than San Diego?
It is. It's surprisingly, there's like an 8-degree difference in temperature.
I literally have never heard that before, Shuzer.
Next time, not that you'll ever remember.
There's an 8-degree difference between
6 to 8 degree. On the coasts.
If
you check it out in the summer, you'll see it.
Because of like the Malibu, you know what I mean? Like the Santa Monica Bay might form a different. I could understand that. Yeah. Like meteorologically, it might make sense.
A lot of crazy weather going around. But weather aside,
you know, they got all those Navy flyers. Maybe that changes the
experimenting
weather.
Experimenting with weather patterns.
Oh yeah, right.
On
seriously.
Coronado. But no, so this is episode number 128. Curtis Martin, Jets, retired number 28.
Former Patriot.
Marshall Faulk, Rams, retired
Patriots
number 28.
Beat him in Super Bowl.
Burt Blyleven, Hall of Fame, retired number.
By the way, the Patriots had to beat Pittsburgh Steelers to go to the Super Bowl to beat Marshall Faulk, much like they have to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers to go to Super Bowl 51. I'm very excited, Cheezer. I am relieved in some way. I want to talk right now. Everybody out there who's a Kansas City Chiefs fan, I just want to tell you, guys, I was rooting for you guys. I really thought you guys are, to me, without question, things happen in a game of football, like a holding or, games can be won or lost. The Chiefs were quite clearly, without question, at least the second best team in the AFC this year. And as a Patriot fan, who had already punched their ticket to see the AFC Championship for the 6th year in a row, Patriot record. I was a little bit. I'm going to be honest with you. I prefer the Steelers have the headlines. You know what I mean? They have the stars, but the Chiefs were the team that scared me. But at the same time, I'm really saddened for you. A, because we're friends. B, it's like you guys are great. It's a great, interesting team.
Great fan base.
I love Alex Smith, man. It's like, I got to be honest with you. I love Alex Smith because there's still a point where, look, there's a weird point. Like, I was talking to my dad over the weekend because we were talking about this whole, 6 Patriot AFC championships in a row, which is really mind-bending. You guys just take it. Like, look, you could have gone to college whole freshman year. You don't even know what you're doing. Basically, you redshirt your freshman year. Then you say, oh, I want to be an architect, which is just starting from scratch now. It's a 5-year major. If you had done all of that, so you don't graduate college for 6 years, guess what? Patriots, AFC championship every year of your 6-year degree. Every year. Every year. That is punching it in. That's doing your job. Patriot mantra. It's crazy. Think about this. Here's the thing I want to talk about, Cheese.
Yes, yes, yes.
The San Francisco 49ers... During Belichick has been a coach of the Patriots, but here's the thing. The 49ers built back up. Like, they're a dynasty that was falling apart, and they built back up under Jim Harbaugh, going to a Super Bowl, though losing. But and then they fire Harbaugh. They've now had three coaches. They haven't, at the time of this recording, they have yet to hire a new head coach, but they will have three head coaches. And it's like, and during this time that, I mean, like,
and a beautiful new stadium too, might I add.
Right, but right, they've built a new stadium, and what I'm saying,
which means expectations,
100%, because the team that went to the Super Bowl built the stadium.
Correct, Levi Stadium.
You know what I'm saying? But Levi Stadium is like a death trap. Like, there's no good mojo in Santa Clara. There's none. Like, they a beautiful stadium. They have a no, like, it is like, it's like
they got sucked into the San Jose Sharks.
No, there was a point. There was a point where I remember New Yankee Stadium was kind of sketchy. Like, the first April, May, like, people were kind of like, okay, we're not getting the bounces. They didn't have, like, a good home record. They did end up I believe the Yankees won the 2009 championship just to protect that. They had to create
something,
because there comes a big point where you have to realize that sports franchises are really about stadium payments. Like, when the Red Sox got sold for like $750 million in 2003 or 2002 or whatever, and with that there was such a tremendous debt service that you know when they started selling teams for the billions, like, you know, like the
just
Clippers,
recently in
the Clippers
years,
just got sold for billions. It's like there's. These are done on massive banking terms that have debt service and all this kind of shit. So you need to make sure, like, hey, the Chargers, just to randomly go back to that, you're going to play in a soccer stadium for the next 2 or 3 years. The Chargers have just...
Which I'm excited about, and we'll get to that later on.
All right, we'll get to that later. Because the Chargers, I don't know what you did, but we got to get to
that. As you mentioned, three head coaches, and this is what any Chiefs fan, listen right here.
Andy Reid, great job.
If
Alex Smith, I am on your side. And by the way, Kelce... I fear like a person. As a Gronkowski fan, that guy does everything. You know what I mean? Like, he's the generic Gronkowski. He's the off brand.
Yes, exactly.
I went to Costco and I bought an 18 pack of Kelce instead of like a 6 pack.
That's
of Gronkowski.
That's a great way to look at it. And, you know, like that version of any nice beer or watered down version of Gronkowski, where they'd make some key drop passes. He missed on a couple big plays that surely would have helped. But what I wanted to say was, Chiefs fan, leave Andy Reid alone. There's no better coach. There's no solution at coaching. This is what Andy Reid does. And look, if all this, it's not blowing you away, it's not Belichick, but it's consistent.
No.
It's a winning
loss.
Attitude.
By the way, you don't blow it up of what you're building.
But they're wanting to now.
That's crazy. Guys, don't do that. Because also, by the way, I'd also just randomly throw that out there. The Houston Texans, while not sexy and not flashy, you know, under Bill O'Brien, they've gone 9-7, 9-7, 9-7. And let me just tell you something, people. Don't throw away 9-7s, because 9-7s are things to build on, so you can get 10-6, so you can get 14. I mean, 14-2, it just seems normal. It's like, by the way, guys, as a Patriot fan, let me tell you this. I want you to keep hiring rookie inexperienced coaches. I want you to keep firing coaches. I want you to never let Jell-O gel and be Jell-O. That's what I want. I want you to hey, 2007 San Diego Chargers, when you fired Marty Schottenheimer, when the Patriots beat them, that was the stupidest thing that ever happened in San Diego Charger history. You guys were building something. Marty Schottenheimer was the best Marty Schottenheimer he'd ever been.
It was like Marty Ball 2.0.
I'm saying is Andy Reid is the best Andy Reid. Like, you don't have the clock management problems. You don't have what Andy Reid has done. I'm not kissing ass at all. I know we have a lot of Kansas City fans that listen. Really, the team I feared the most was you guys. Because I know that, like, the Steelers could beat me. I could lose to the Steelers. The Patriots could lose to the Steelers. But it was like the Chiefs were that game could really sneak up you, and you beat us. I mean, like, the last Super Bowl we won, when we made the film of it, the loss to you Chiefs, the Andy Reid Chiefs, is a turning point game. We lost so badly that made us reassess everything. Like, you guys are a serious franchise, and don't blow that up.
And that's the thing. You just got to, Chiefs fans, we're not the Patriots, and we're not the Steelers. And so don't act, you know, they like.
Alex Smith has proven the Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith question, hasn't he?
Yeah, I feel so. Yes, absolutely. And Alex Smith's maybe not the problem either. I mean, if you go back and look at that game, the defense is incredible considering how many injuries they've just to give up the 6 field goals, as you heard earlier coming into the show. You know, look.
Do you believe in field goals?
No, I mean, 18 points, I mean, it's all field goals. So kudos to the defense because Le'Veon Bell, though he had, I don't know, whatever he finished with, 100 and whatever.
That's the defense I didn't want to face. That's what I'm saying. I didn't want to face that red zone defense.
And, you know, just to keep him out of the end zone, it was incredible. And a big Eric Berry pick, and it all came down to that. What hurt so bad was that it was good. The game was tied, and I was like, no flags. And then that little yellow box comes up, and then
so terrible.
They show the Eric Fisher, and Eric Fisher, God bless him, 2013, I always say 2011 or 13, number one overall pick. Yeah, number one overall, you know, type talent, but that'll happen.
He's still good. It was, hey, it happens.
But just look, that's what we are as Chiefs. And this is reminding me.
And by the way, just so I'm going to say this about the Eric Fisher holding call. In some ways, as a Patriot Red Sox fan, it's like Buckner because that wasn't the end. It's like Eric Fisher got called for holding. You guys had another shot. Like the worst thing that happened was
such a bad shot.
I mean, no, it's 10 yards back. If you're, by the way, you want to win the Super Bowl, you want to say that if you're the best team in the NFL in a given season, then guess what? That's what I'm going to say. The best team in the NFL should always be able to beat a 10-yard holding call. I should be so good that if something happens, I have to, but I get the down over. Are you kidding me? I mean, I get to rip James Harrison's head off if I want. Well, and I'll get another shot at it. Well, you just have to not call me.
Look, the Packers field goal kicker, he made the second one after Garrett called the timeout.
By the way, I got to be honest with you. Was that CGI? Oh, like man. It was it waggle or some sort of PlayStation shit?
I swear I saw it left.
It was going another way.
And then it worked out well. Look, as promised last week, we're going to have Kevin Quinn as a Midwest.
We're going to do this
segment. Yeah, we'll just right, drop so it we'll, now.
Cause right, because we'll get your Kansas Chiefs City and, stuff out.
So we had him back on this week. Just a real quick, just how KC's feeling right immediately after the game.
Snap.
Here. And also, let's plug real quick. If you're in Southern California, La Jolla, that means you're getting burritos at Don Carlos Taco Shop.
Oh, my God. They're the best burritos.
On Pearl Street, Caddy Corner from the world-famous comedy store.
Somebody at Kitty Corner.
And also, this Wednesday the 18th, I, John Schieser, will be at Reds in Pacific Beach.
Oh, God, that's such a great show.
9:30. It's going to be fantastic.
It's a great show. It's one of the best comedy shows.
And I'll be at the comedy store beforehand, but I'd go to both. Whatever. Follow me. You can ride in my car. I'll take you from the La Jolla Comedy Store.
Oh, my God, that'd be great. You can get burritos together. It's like a whole thing.
We'll go to the Comedy Store La Jolla.
We should have a contest.
Which is Caddy Corner, of course, from Don Carlos. Or Kitty Corner. And then we'll go down to Reds in Pacific Beach. And again, that show's at 9:30. And then if you need any shirts printed up, whether it's your design or you need something designed, go to unionpresskc.com. They got a bunch of great shirts, and they always take care of me, so I'm thinking they'll do the same for
Hashtag,
you.
These are the plugs. These are the That's plugs. Right. These are the plugs.
And when we get back from this little break here, we'll be talking with Kevin Quinn. There it goes. Kevin
It's going to be an Irish wake for the Kansas City Chiefs.
With two N's.
We're going to talk.
After this.
We're going to be on the downside.
As promised, he's back, Kevin Quinn, our Kansas City Midwest sports correspondent, and he's here to tell us about the tears, the river of tears that is flowing through Arrowhead Stadium parking lot, the thousands of barbecue grills I saw left abandoned after that devastating field goal display by the Steelers on Sunday. How are you feeling, Kevin?
I'm feeling pretty bad. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not excited by any means. It's one of those days that you're just depressed all day long. I can't speak for everyone, but I had a feeling that they probably weren't going to win before the game even started. And then to see it end like it did, it really hits home. It's pretty much par for the course when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs going to the playoffs. They just can't seem to ever get it done, no matter what happens during the regular season, and that's kind of
I lost track of that. I got a little excited myself. You hear about this defense that bends, never breaks. Doesn't matter who's injured, they're going to plug somebody in that's going to be just as good, and it seemed to have worked. And they got a couple lucky bounces, and it's just everything kind of ran out. The luck ran out. The offense just was not there. That might have been more of a Steelers defense than a Chiefs, offense just falling apart type of thing. But what's the general take in the community right now? Is it just, are people just satisfied that we got to the playoffs, even though we lost again? Or is that enough, I guess, to carry Chiefs fan into another season?
I think, obviously we're less than 24 hours from the game being over as we record this, but no, people are they're pissed. They're really angry. But last night, as soon as it all happened, everything fell apart. People were calling for Alex Smith to be fired because they say that Alex Smith is never going to be the quarterback that's going to get you to the Super Bowl. And I can see that. I think Alex Smith is perfectly serviceable, but at best, you're getting a guy who's slightly better than Trent Dilfer. But on the flip side of that coin, too, they're not happy with Andrew Reid either. They just don't think that he's going to be able to get over that hump. And you saw it offensively last night. They had a couple of good drives, but for the most part, they couldn't put anything together. And then the defense, which was usually solid, just every time they gave Bell the ball, he would just stand there for a second, look for a hole, and then break out for 15 or 20 yards, it seemed like. So, yeah, people are not happy. It's Alex Smith and Andy Reid, and then there's a little bit of Eric Fisher, too, just because he got the penalty. Yeah, the penalty for the hold, which negated the two-point conversion that would have tied the game. But people have been angry at Eric Fisher since they chose him as the first overall draft pick.
Anytime you're the first overall draft pick, and listeners at home, you're like, who's Eric Fisher? Yeah, he's the first overall draft pick in, I think, 2009, I think, or 2010. Anyway, clearly.
I think more recently than that, but it's probably, it'll go down as one of the worst first overall draft picks of all time, just because it was a year when they didn't have any quarterbacks or running backs out there. And, usually you're going to get somebody at least who looks good for a year or two, but I don't know, not good.
I mean, they moved them all up and down that line trying to find a spot. I mean, he's the Tony Mandrich of 1989 type bust, but not with as much
Tony
hype.
Tony Mandrich.
You know what I'm talking about, that Sports Illustrated cover sitting there, and his like, he's got the Brian Bosworth steroids going, except for he's an offensive lineman.
It's pretty good. That's a good one. It's just a tricky situation. I mean, obviously everything hasn't sunk in, but it's one of those days that you don't want to even watch. You don't want to watch ESPN, or you don't want to listen to the radio, because all they're going to do is rehash everything bad that happened. So a couple of days from now, we can forget it all happened, and some of us will focus on KU basketball for 2 or 3 months, and then most of us will just get ready for the Royals, and hopefully they can figure out a way to do things.
And, since you brought it up, I'm happy to, as a Royals fan, announce that Danny Duffy essentially signed for free, a 5-year extension for free with the Kansas City Royals today. It was a 5-year, $65 million contract. And if you just go look at top Major League Baseball salaries, and you'll understand what I mean by for free, because he could have easily commanded 20. I mean, Kershaw gets $30 million a year, and he's not Kershaw. Yes.
That's ridiculous.
But he could, he could have easily gotten 20, $23 million per year. So you're looking at 110, 5 million or 5-year, $110 million contract. He opted for the 5-year, $65 million contract. I mean, he did grow up in Southern California. I think in La Jolla, which is a nice, it's a good area to grow up. But I heard him on the radio several times say things like, how much money is enough? I love Kansas City. I love the organization. They drafted him out of high school, dealt with the Tommy John surgery 4 years ago, and just rehabbing that. And the organization has been patient with him. Now,
that's true. That's one thing too. I think you could say for the Royals, they're patient with people who other organizations would throw away very quickly. And I feel like they're putting something in the water too, because people just do not want to leave. And I'm obviously Kansas City is my home, and I like it very much. But most players do not want to get out of here. They only leave when their contract's up, and they know they can get tons and tons of dough somewhere else. I mean, you can't fault Eric Hosmer from running out of here in about a year. He's going to get paid so much money somewhere. But
right.
Danny Duffy, I mean, you're right. He's probably looking at it somewhere between maybe he's going to get $15 or $20 million more somewhere else. But how much money is too much money? I mean, I'd be glad if I won $20 million in the Powerball. I'd probably stay around here. I wouldn't say give me $40 million and I'll move to North Dakota. Money's money. Once you get enough of it, you can live off it forever. And you know, there's only so much you're going to do with it. But Duffy's a good dude. That's a good contract for us, hopefully. Who knows how it'll all play out. But
and Dayton Moore timed it perfectly right after the Chiefs lost. So it was a nice little soft pillow for Kansas City sports, Midwest sports fans to lay their head on in this.
That's true.
In the morning of yet another home Chiefs playoff loss and Chiefs playoff loss. In general, you know, it's been 23 seasons since they last won at home, and you know, maybe next year is the lucky year. Kevin Quinn.
Yeah, right. You know, that's one of the silliest things I've ever heard. Next year is going to be the year. If I have to hear that one more time, that's it for me. I'm done with it. I just it's the worst. Anyways, I appreciate it. Thank you for speaking with me, and I'm going to go back in the morning in the room with the fireplace and all the dimly lit bulbs in my house. So
Real quick.
Catch you later.
Social media stuff, Twitter, any of that stuff?
Yeah, you can Twitter me. Kevin Quinn KC is the Twitter machine for me. And if you find me on Facebook, just don't add me. I'd appreciate it if you just leave me alone.
Yeah, and that's Kevin Quinn with two N's.
Two N's. KevinQuinnKC.
Hell yeah. Kevin, thanks for coming on this week. As mentioned, you'll be the Midwest correspondent. And so, and we don't always, like I said, we'll figure out a way that it, so you can, if you got something that pops into your mind, you just record it right then, send it to me, and we'll get it on too. So, but thanks for taking time out of your surely busy day talking some Midwest sports with us. All right, man, be good. No thanks, Omaha. Thanks a lot. Kansas City star, that's what I are. You're the little daddy, you're the same car. Drop a big old Cadillac with four wheels. Got rhinestones on the spokes. I got credit down at my grocery store, and my barber tells me jokes. I'm the number one attraction in every supermarket park. Kevin, thanks for coming on again. And look, it hurts, and it's going to hurt. But on the bright side, KU is KU, and they're destined to hopefully make the Final Four. If not,
Rock,
it'll be
Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
It'll be
Let's
another
say
loss
that.
Season.
That. As
yes.
a Syracuse University alum, I will say Rock Chalk Jayhawk. I wish you the best, KU and Kansas and the Chiefs next season, 2018. You know, especially, by the way, if Tom Brady gets a fifth ring, my fandom is for sale. I am willing to go, and I will help. I will help root for any team that I will free agent myself. By the way, I bring the winning, dude. I get serious about my team. No, I get serious. Just so you know, in 2007, I watched the AFC Championship against the San Diego Chargers in a convent. I snuck pizza and beer into a convent up at St. Mary's College. It's an absolutely true story. I watched the game with my godmother. We won. I should have watched the Super Bowl at the convent, too. I maybe set the expectations too high. That said...
We'll take you. Look, if I could take it
after. That's what I just want. If Belichick and Brady can get ring five, that's all I want right now. I'm not a happy man. What I need Tom Brady to get to Super Bowl number 7, and I need him to win ring 5. As Steeler fans know, as the creators of the expression, one for the thumb. The Steeler fans, who were the first franchise, you know, to win 4 Super Bowls in a row. By the way, Cheezer's doing a great job of modulating my volume right
up
now.
And down,
I'm
going up and down.
Emphatic. I'm getting hyperbolically emphatic.
Hey, it's a good thing. It's a great thing.
One for the thumb, guys. One for the thumb was created in the post-4 Super Bowl championship. Terry Bradshaw, Steel Curtain Steelers. One for the thumb. The quest for the fifth ring, which didn't actually happen. They got the fifth ring. The Steelers franchise got it much, much later after the Neil O'Donnell debacle and then Ben Roethlisberger. But here we are. Tom Brady suspended 4 games. Bill Belichick, the hoodie, the greatest coach of all time. This could be 12 AFC championships. It's like, it's crazy the amount of AFC championships.
Share a little.
That's the thing. Like, as a fan, like, really, as a fan of, look, I'm a Red Sox fan, so I went through heartache forever. I'm wearing the 2004, and now I can die in peace Red Sox shirt. It's like, look, guys, I was the ultimate lovable loser fan. I was a Red Sox fan, and the Patriots were death and terrible. We're a terrible franchise, and now I have a great franchise, and I'm never going to – not a single day of my sports life goes by that I am not really appreciative of – I'm living in the golden era of my franchise. It's like, look, honest to God, when Belichick and Brady are gone, I'm going to care a little bit – I'm going to have to care a little bit less about the New England Patriots because just emotionally it would hurt me too much. Look. Kansas City Chiefs, you guys are like investment. It's an investment in the stock market, and you're hoping to build and like, cause like, look, you guys aren't done. Your window's not closing. You know, it's like. And by the way,
I'm not gonna open as
right. And as a Patriot fan, I'm not gonna bemoan my window, my Belichick Brady window closing. You know why? Because my window's been open for 15 years.
It has got to be breezy and drafty in this. Oh, Patriots
it's a wide
house.
Open. I mean, yeah.
How much
it's
is
a,
your heating
a,
bill?
It's an open air patio out here. I mean, 6 AFC championships in a row.
So if you win this year, we bring you back. We bring some of the Eric Marino. Oh, that
I'm a
Marino
free agent. I will root for whatever franchise will have.
I just want you to cut those locks in the name of the Chiefs.
I will shave. By the way, Patriots win the Super Bowl. I shave my head that night at the show.
That's
up,
how
go
it goes.
Up Sunday night.
And I would love to do that in the name of the Kansas City Chiefs and then take that hair and spread it around Arrowhead
Stadium.
You take
it to Arrowhead Stadium. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. And then after that, we would have a little bit extra mojo. We just look. The problem that I had with the game, and you know, said it earlier, it's like I had expectations. And which is what I never had as a Chiefs fan. So that's why it stings. It hurts a little bit.
But see, this is just one of those, like, look, by the way, to the Dallas Cowboy fans and
that hurts too.
And Kansas City Chiefs fans, by the way, it's one of those things, like, let me say something. There's nothing wrong with your team. You just lost a game. It's a playoff game. And by the way, shit happens. Like, they're just, like, Tom Brady threw as many interceptions in the divisional playoff game as he did all season. Like, by the way, the fact that he'd only thrown 2 interceptions all season was haunting me all week to the point where I feel it actually cosmically manifested itself in, like, of course Tom Brady threw as many interceptions in the one playoff game as he did all season. Of course he did. Do you understand how afraid I was of, like, Sheezer? The Houston Texans had never won at Foxborough. They're 0-4. Do you know how much, like, you hate just the, well, it's got to break eventually. Like, I mean, like, the pressure of just keeping a shutout. Like, I hate Yankee fans because they never wanted us to win ever.
And that game was, it felt closer than the final score was. Because still, even in the second half, you're thinking, like, the Texans can make a few moves. Plus, defensively, I mean, it got away from them there towards the end. But just watching the game casually, I felt the Texans still, like, had a shot deeper into that game than I really
thought. Bill Belichick is like, it's like watching a game of playoff. Belichick is like a game of poker where he plays leverage, he plays hands, and it's like, yes, it was exactly that. It's like, it was really close, and then it was like at a certain point when it was all in, we basically doubled our chip count. Like, because we ended up doubling their score. We covered the crazy 6. By the way, I had to tip my hat to Vegas. Because there was a point where it's like, hey, they set the spread at 16, which I don't even care about that shit. But then you're like, there was a point where as the game was winding down, the Patriots were at 15. And you're like, well, wow, Vegas, you had it. And then the Patriots actually got another, like, they passed it. Like, they got an 18-point win. But it was like, Vegas, right on. Like, it's...
Well, they also got hit because I read that the William Hill bookmakers in Vegas, so they had like a... In 108 of their locations, lost 7 figures.
Right, because a lot of people
on the Packers,
money.
Cowboys, Chiefs.
By the way, Cowboys,
because both games went over, and then both covered, and then a lot of people plus parlaying that would just.
Sheezer, let me ask you this: It's like, let's talk quickly about the Dallas Cowboys. Okay. And here's why. Because I want you to tell you that I love hating the Dallas Cowboys. I love hating them. Okay. By the way, I love that Tony Romo. Let me say this. I love that Tony Romo went to Mexico with Jessica Simpson and then he fucked up that. I love that. Do you understand? As a sportsaholic, I love that Tony Romo fucked up a playoff game and it's haunted him his whole career.
And
love
that was
it.
So long ago that Jessica Simpson was still relevant.
Right.
Somewhat.
Oh my God.
You youngsters out there, look up
Google Jessica Simpson's. Right. She is over. And by the way, it's funny because I don't actually hate Tony Romo.
I think the Cowboys are harder to hate now than they used to be.
It's like, hey, dudes, by the way, it's almost like by the way, Aaron Rodgers pulled out that sort of old man Brett Favre magic. This is when a playmaker said for one more day, Billy Chappell for the love of the game.
Throwing across his body.
Right,
30 yards. That guy makes that incredible 90-degree.
It's like, you know, Dallas Cowboys. You may have lost the day, but I feel like for the next 8-10 years, we're gonna see Dak and Zeke. And it's weird.
No, we will, and that's what was so dangerous about that game.
I don't. It's almost like we dodged a bullet.
As a fan, as a football fan, if Dallas sneaks through, makes it to the Super Bowl, even loses, God forbid, wins, like they're preparing and they're setting themselves up for a Steelers, Patriots type run.
Well, the other thing is, it's like, hey,
barring injury,
the biggest knock about the Dallas, the biggest knock you had about the actual team, the Dallas Cowboys, the team that was on the field going into the playoffs was, well, how are Dak and Zeke going to do? They're rookies. They have no playoff experience. Well, they both performed great and
came from behind.
And they did that. Poise. Right. And so it's like, so then clearly, they're a playoff caliber team going into next year. I'm not even trying to say they're going to win.
With the Giants getting better, you know, like who?
Exactly.
Washington going to figure it out?
Right. I don't know the interest. I don't understand.
Like Dallas, like if you're a Cowboys fan,
we were so excited about what happened with Kirk Cousins in Washington that we hired the OC for the Rams. It's another story. Okay, but with Dallas Cowboys, it was just. These guys are just going to be a year older. They're going to use it as experience. I wish I could hate Dak Prescott, but I liked him in college. And he went in the fourth round. He was the best of all the rookie quarterbacks. He had the most. By the way, being the Dallas Cowboys starting quarterback is, I always thought, the toughest job in sports because
he makes it look fun. And like, I love
unbelievable.
The guy. He's like, from, you know, obviously late round pick, Mississippi State. I'd never heard of him.
He was buried in the SEC.
There
was a point where he was like in like his junior, I want to say he was like almost a Heisman candidate, like in the early October, November.
When they're like, here's the top 10 people that are, you know, mm-hmm. and he like led up, like started the season with a 5-touchdown game or something.
That could be crazy, right.
And his mom's adorable. She reminds me of like all of my mom's sisters. It's like, come on in. Can I get you anything? I'm like, oh, that's cute as hell. Love this guy. But from what everyone says, you know.
Trust me. Coaches guys, down, by the humble, way, I would love dude. To hate the Dallas Cowboys. Even
me
like,
too.
You know,
I hate Texas. So I mean, I do. I have jokes about
Zeke,
Texas sucking.
You know, it's like, I honest to God, I so hope the domestic abuse charge is actually like fictitious and there's nothing there to suspend him for. Like, I don't mean like.
Are you talking about Elliot?
Yeah. I don't want that to have happened.
Here's the thing. I know he's from St. Louis area. And here's the thing. If the girl is from St. Louis, girls from St. Louis are shady as hell, and
that's
nothing.
Weird. We can drop this. I mean, we'll drop it right there.
No, I'm just saying.
Before
I'm just
we
saying.
Say anything
notoriously, look, Nelly made a career rapping about it. That's all
I
hope, saying.
Well, it's a weird
best
thing to
you,
say. I just don't want it to be true because it's like I didn't even want to. Because by the way, I also don't want those people like. Never mind. It doesn't even matter.
Is domestic violence in the NFL what cocaine was the NBA in the late 80s, early 90s? Like that's just going to be the topic.
We didn't talk about this. So I ended up watching that Lawrence Phillips documentary that's currently on the cable channels. Did you see any of this?
I haven't. Which, by the way, Todd Munson, friend of the show, listeners. If you go back last year, we actually had Todd Munson on, diehard Cornhusker. Went to Lawrence Phillips' funeral out here. It was in Pasadena. So he actually, you can go back and listen to that episode. The number escapes me. I'm guessing somewhere in the 90 to 100 range, somewhere in there. But he said it was incredibly sad, and he recognized a lot of the old linemen from the glory. Those were the glory days of Nebraska football.
Oh, my God.
Where they were just stomping people.
I mean, very interesting.
Stomping people offensively and defensively.
They didn't, like, lose for 2 years.
You had that great Tommy Frazier run against Miami.
And it was also like, by the way, it's like Phillips gets suspended and it doesn't matter. By the way, it's like for the team, it doesn't matter. Like, you could look at it as, well, they wanted him to win the national championship, but they didn't lose anything. It was like, it was one of those crazy things. So the documentary does a very let's just say they convey the emotion of the night where he, like, grabbed an ex-girlfriend and dragged her by her hair downstairs and smashed her face into mailboxes. And it's visceral and it's real. And it's a terrible story, but they have a talking head, and I don't know who it was, but he ends up saying, and I just thought it was weird. He was like, you know, that just wouldn't happen today. Like, today, if that happened, you know, the guy would be, he'd just be out of the school. And I was like, didn't we just see, you know, Oklahoma.
The subway was just horrible. Like, saw it at Florida State, you know.
Right. Isn't there always a video reveal? Like, it's like, by the way, we get the police report, and then things are adjudicated, and suspensions are given, and then a video gets leaked, and then we see
2 years later
about a guy getting punched in the face. I mean, a girl getting punched in the face, which is never good video. I mean, by the way, Jersey Shore. Why do you know what Jersey Shore is? Because Snooki got punched in the face. A guy, by the way, the guy that hit her in the face, just a sidebar right now, it was like, I remember watching that punch and going, you know, if I ever have, I don't think anyone should get hit, and I don't think that Snooki should get hit or a woman should get hit, but if I had to hit anybody, I would want to connect as solidly as that guy hit Snooki in the face. I mean, because he was all in. Like, that was one of the most connected. Like, I'm talking about, like, I've seen Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson. I've seen people professionally hit other people in the face. And what this guy did to Snooki was one of the most solid squared up punches. Like, form perfect.
And look, that's how she sat on his bar stool. She wouldn't let him order a drink. I can't even remember.
It was something about that. Something horribly. And by the way, we're against domestic abuse.
Right, of course,
Yes, all women.
And so, but all in all, though, a good documentary there on Mr. Phillips. Informative.
Right, but it was just that crazy thing. It's like, no, these things happen still over and over. There are franchises and there are colleges where these things just, it's like, you know, look, there are, you know, we're also dealing with, you know, and I'm not trying to, Jameis Winston, even if you don't go with the rape sexual assault allegations, it's like the, hey, I'm just going to walk out of a Publix without paying for crab legs. Like, clearly some people live in an entitled world. I mean, and people do. Like, we're just realists.
Yeah, we deal with it. We see it.
That's what happens.
To switch up, let's talk about our brand new, the newest franchise in Los Angeles, the LA Chargers, that are coming to town to play at the enormous, large.
By the way, I am now going to imitate all of Los Angeles when they discuss their newest franchise.
And
go. They are booing. Here's the crazy thing.
Because it's San Diego's, like.
Guys, I just want you to know, right now as we record this, we're in Los Angeles, California, the home of the Los Angeles Rams and now the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, 2 years ago, neither one of these franchises were in Los Angeles. Now
everyone was living happily
and
comfortably.
We have friends. Now we have friends that have been Rams fans. They were LA Rams fans. They were St. Louis Rams fans. And then it was like, and I would go up to them, like Eleanor Kerrigan or Nathan Hurd, good friends of ours, good comics. And I'd be like, oh, dude, you know, your team's coming to LA. No excitement. I mean, they weren't happy about it. I'm like, they weren't. It's like, and it was weird. It's like, and by the way, they have no particular attachment to St. Louis in this fight.
Eleanor being from Philly and Nate from Seattle.
Right, right. They just like the Rams as a franchise. But then their team, which they don't have they already don't have a geographical connection to the team. But that's their favorite team. And now your team is coming to your town. Not excited.
Well, it's no longer the greatest show on turf. If it was 2001 Rams, everyone's excited.
But now, it's like, and I was going to let that go. But then San Diego Chargers now are the Los Angeles Chargers. We have friends. We have many, many friends who have migrated, like yourself, at brief period, lived down in San Diego. It's like, and you migrated.
It's a great place.
Right. And it's
to retire.
two to five hours away, depending on traffic.
Oh, God.
Right?
120 miles. That's
and
the best
way to guys, play. Just so you know, here's the thing. Sometimes when you live in Los Angeles, you go down to San Diego, and for whatever happens, the gods just bless it. And you, it's like one of the first times. It's like, you know, when you go to Vegas and you go to you win, somebody pulls right away. Like the first, like, they know in Vegas. And the first slot machine, you win $80, you win like $160, some weird number. And then it's like, but San Diego, it's like 2.5 hours. You fly down there. It's a beautiful day, and you have In-N-Out Burger on the road, and you're with friends, and you just go like, "Oh my God, why
you're
don't we just
at the sun setting, right? The Pacific and you're just Ocean. Like, it's just like, gorgeous.
Why don't we do this all the time?" And then you get stuck in some 5 hour, 6 hour nightmare, and you're like, "Why do we ever do this?" And you don't go for like 9 years. That's what happens.
That's how discouraging it is.
That's what happens. Okay, so now we have a ton of friends that are Charger fans, and they're diehard fans, but they live here, they work here, and they love the Chargers, and now their team is coming here. And guess what? They're mad. They're not even like the Rams fans were just like, eh. The Charger fans that live here, mad about it. Which is like, so I'm saying Los Angeles currently has two teams that the fans of those teams that live in this town actually don't want them to live here, which is crazy.
It is. Well, it's crazy to think that two now, San Diego without a football team, one that's been there for 50 years or close to it, in the eyes on a national spotlight, like you're now, you have a baseball team and that's it. You know, there's no other sports teams there.
Well, the Clippers are a former San Diego
exactly.
team. It's like Move. You're a place where like you're Chargers. Like the Buffalo. You're like the Buffalo of the Southland.
You know, and it's the point now where Comic-Con is now their second professional thing.
It might be like the capital of their state.
Like yeah, exactly. That's kind of what's crutching them up maybe in the eyes
and
of
the Navy.
Of the oh, yeah. And securing all
and
of our
just the
that thing.
And just the Navy.
For those of you that have never been to San Diego, it is gorgeous, Ron Burgundy, all that bullshit. But it really is just a huge Navy base disguised as a gorgeous city.
Yeah.
Is really what it is in its simplest form, and you can easily detect that.
Everybody in Los Angeles is involved in Hollywood, even if they're not involved in Hollywood. And everybody who lives in San Diego is like 1 degree of separation from the Navy.
And that might be part of the problem that a third of their population is out at sea for 6 months at a time every year. There's a lot of transplants in San Diego, so it's hard to root in that fandom.
By the way, guys, if you're ever just a quick shout out, if you're ever just in a negative, bad mood and you need something, you don't think you can smile, just YouTube the Village People's In the Navy and just listen to that because, by the way, some of the rhymes and lyrics are really great. I listened to it over the Christmas break. In the Navy, you get to sail the seven seas. In the Navy, it's really, you know, the fact that the song exists lyrically, hilarious, and it'll pick you up. So anyway, back to the Chargers.
Well, what I'm saying, it's hard to get, it's hard to pass a ballot. You know, Spanos like, well, we only got 43% of the vote for the stadium initiative. Well, the fans don't want to pay for the stadium. They don't want to vote for the stadium. One, you're a billionaire. That you're renting now from an owner who built his own stadium.
Just so, build a stadium. But by the way, you just need, it's like, by the way, my franchise almost left to St. Louis. It almost left and it almost moved twice. It almost went to St. Louis, the Patriots, and it almost went to Connecticut. And then the ownership of the Patriots, you know, they built kind of their, I mean, like, look, with these things, they have to build roads and there's going to still be some taxpayer burden because you're building a giant metroplex. But a lot of it was like, they look, man, you're a billionaire. Put your money in your shit.
And it is 1 point, whatever billion. Now he's going to be pulling rents
because the owner of the Chargers is so stupid that when he announced going to to Los Angeles, his statement was this, as I follow verbatim, "We're not going to look backwards. We're going to look forwards. We're going to look forwards." I'm sorry. I said verbatim and then I fucked it up. we're going to Fuck, we're looking forwards, not backwards. What he said was, Sheezer, we're looking forwards, not backwards.
Backwards,
which is
not
retarded,
forwards.
But that's retarded because the San Diego Chargers were originally the Los Angeles Chargers of 1960. So you can't say you're not looking backwards when you're moving back to the city in which you're originated in. That is special needs.
That was back in the glory days of the Roman Gabriel LA
I'm
Rams.
Saying we were, back in the, I'm saying we were like Kennedy was running for president. It was the Frank Sinatra was a Democrat. It was exciting times.
And Spanos pulled the classic, the Trump move where he has his two. He goes, these are also Chargers executives, my two sons. I'm like, oh, okay. Douchebag number two and three.
I had no idea, Sheez, that this. That they were going to play. I just assumed they were also going to play in the Coliseum.
Or go Rose Bowl. And I don't know what the expectations of the Rose Bowl is.
But we're playing in Carson at some field.
I like the move. It's a tight stadium. And listen, NFL fans all across the country, if you're playing the Chargers, get a ticket because you're watching an NFL game in a small college.
You might have to go.
Or big high school.
We should broadcast the game live from
there.
We should
tape
a game. We should bring the whole bag.
I saw Travis Pastrana knock himself out on a BMX, on a motocross course there about 12 years ago during the X Games. It's a really small.
It really was
weird. It's an MLS stadium.
I have to tell you, like week 17, all of a sudden it dawned on me. It was like 10:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden I was like, you know, I could just drive down to the Coliseum and buy a ticket and see football. Like, it was like all of a sudden I was like,
you could just hop on the 220 bus.
I'm not hopping on a bus.
I'm just saying you're two bus stops away from the Coliseum.
Oh, that's all right. Well, maybe I will do that. Maybe I will do that. I've never been on the bus.
Never? It's convenient, but dirty. Real dirty and creepy. So yeah, just don't.
It's like 8mm. You can't unsee what happens on the bus.
Dude, or what happens on a bus stop. That's kind of what kept me off the bus for so long. And then finally, I went to Chicago a couple years ago and read the bus around everywhere and trained. I'm like, this is great. I got to do this everywhere. But that aside, the Rams, though, or well, the Chargers. Their fans, they just don't care. They gave up years ago.
By the way, they may have weirdly slit their throats. Like, I think they may become, they may actually become, by the way, people who are listening who aren't from Los Angeles and people who are from Los Angeles, let me tell you this. The NFL team that Los Angeles wants is the Raiders. Who they want. We want, by the way, there's a map. I don't know if we ever talked about the Sheez. There's a map of the United States of America, and every county has a color code for the most fans.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so around Buffalo, it's like Buffalo Bill Blue. And around Foxborough in New England, it's mostly Patriot Blue. And there are two interesting things about this map. One is
the Southwest.
There is no county in America that is New York Jet green. No county. Like in every single county in America, there are more Jet fans. There are more Giant fans or Patriot fans or Bills fans. There are always or Eagle fans. There are always more other fans than Jet fans. So the Jets as a fan base don't own a single
county.
And
what do? They share a stadium with the Giants.
That's true. And then the other thing is Los Angeles County and the neighboring counties are Raider black. They are Raider black, even though they've been gone for 20 years.
Because you have Howie Long, you have
it was
Bo
a great
Jackson,
time. It was like
you have Marcus Allen,
this was
Lyle Alzada, all those guys.
They changed culture in that sense. It almost like you could almost say like the 83 Raiders were in some ways like the equivalent of, they were like a football Beatles. There was a thing that broke through in identity. Like they moved the zeitgeist. They touched popular culture that the LA Raiders has a cachet to it that even though the team has literally not existed in 20 years. I also wanted to say this to you, Sheezer, that the Rams are terrible. Here's a secret, everyone. The Rams are terrible. What I thought was, with these Rams being so terrible, is like I don't feel like we got the St. Louis Rams. I feel like the LA Rams went to St. Louis and became the St. Louis Rams, right? And won a Super Bowl and lost a Super Bowl. And now they've come back, but they're not the St. Louis Rams. It's almost like we froze the loser 1994 Rams and they're just the Los Angeles bad Rams are just
back.
And they
never replaced Jerome Bettis.
They've
got nothing to work with. And if they do very much feel like an expansion franchise, and I'll tell you what, so will the Chargers when they're playing at Home Depot at a big high. I mean, they play the high school regional state playoffs at the Home Depot Center for football here. I mean, it's going to be a an incredible and very unique
NFL experience. Because I went to a football game in I went to a Permian Panther, you know, the Friday Night Lights.
Oh, that's right,
team.
That's right.
But I think that may technically have more seating capacity than the Chargers. Like, I may have literally, guys, what I'm saying is I may have seen a high school football game that has more seating capacity than an NFL team next year.
Well, I'll tell you what, who's excited about the L.A. Rams signing 30-year-old head coach Sean McVay is Timothy McVay's family.
Because, God.
You know, finally another McVay in the spotlight other than your son.
We did need to take the stink off that name.
But as far as I can tell, just Bobby Fischer of...
No, by the way, born in 1986, which should even make you feel old. You're saying it's like Bill Buckner nothing to him.
This dude was in seventh grade in my senior year of high school. That's how...
86?
Yeah,
man?
Yeah, no, he's a youngster, but he was...
Larry Bird means nothing to him.
He was the grandson of a 49ers executive. There's some great pictures of him and his brothers as kids with Steve Young. And so he grew up around 49ers practices. And as with anything, if you've ever had the privy of knowing someone that was in some sort of weird profession, for me, the example I use is with stand-up comedy is a friend of mine's dad was a comedian. So at the age of 10, 11, 12, 13, I'm like, you can be a comic. So when you're around people that do something, in this guy's case, football, and you're around, you see how coaches interact, and you do that for a decade.
And it's not foreign to you. It's not some big leap. It's not some foreign land to you,
right?
Because you understand the lingo.
And I think it was a tight end. It was an interview with the old Redskins tight end Cooley or current. That aside, he wasn't impressed. He was like,
I'm just going to say my starting quarterback is 9 years older than the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams.
I mean, it's if you
my quarterback,
he knows what he's doing is pretty much what I can gather. He's been around there.
Him.
He says the right things. You know, you keep getting these Theo Epstein comparisons, which really don't make sense because one is general managing an entire franchise.
It's a different thing. You don't have to.
Right, and one's coaching it. But if I'm the Rams, look.
I think it's a different interaction.
It's a young team. He's only actually younger than one player on the Rams. So that actually, the age thing.
Right, they have a young team. I've
if anything,
that.
They're going to try to spin that so that it actually feeds off the players. Because he's like, hey, you know, we have the same playlist on our iPod. So we, you know,
well, they
listen
also,
to me.
They got Wade Phillips to be the defensive coordinator. Right?
Really?
Didn't he come? Because he's gone from the Denver Broncos.
Oh, okay.
Because that was an interesting thing that Denver Broncos, like here's a story that I didn't think get any coverage is like, look, if anyone forgets, I mean, the Broncos won the last Super Bowl, but no one remembers that because Peyton Manning retired and Osweiler went away and everything about the Broncos fell apart. And Kubiak, now for health reasons, has stepped away from the team. And I was really interested to see Wade Phillips, the defensive coordinator of what was really, inarguably last season, the best defense in football. They were better than the Legion of Boom. They were last year. And everyone said Von Miller and the defense clearly won the Super Bowl for Denver.
But he had great players. It wasn't
But Wade Phillips has a tenure. He's definitely has an NFL pedigree. But there's a certain point where you're going like, so I was curious to be like, well, if Kubiak's gone, are you just gonna like the guy is the head? I mean, do you just give it to Wade Phillips? Because he's been a head coach before. It is there. Like, I can understand not giving to him, but then it's like what happened is he's left. He now, I believe, is the defensive coordinator of the Los Angeles Rams, who weirdly also have an assistant head coach who I guess is outranks him on the Rams. And then, you know, the Denver went with brand new people, which is like, so they're in a rebuilding phase.
Well, I just think I like the if it is Wade Phillips. I'm trying to look it up right now.
It's all happening. Everything I just said is true.
I like it because he can kind of sit back and be the grandpa and just kind of give.
I was kind of thinking of it as like unnecessary.
Yes, Wade Phillips and Joe Barry are the.
I was thinking of it sort of like two coordinators. You remember like what's his name? Robert Loggia
Necessary Roughness, where he plays, I'll be in charge. I'll be in charge of the defense, and you do the offense. You know what I mean? Like, I get the defense. You get, so I feel like Wade Phillips is going to be like the grandpa, old man, mentor, you know, and this young 30, he'll be 31, you know, the Theo Epstein young, you know, the young head coach.
He's going to be playing off that, I can't let grandpa down. I can't let grandpa.
Well, it's like one guy gets to, you know, he gets to be the bad guy or the heavy and be like, hey, we got to go out when dad's mad at us. You know what I mean? So, he could build a thing. You know, I don't wish him not success.
It could be worse. It could still be Jeff Fisher, you know. Which,
I don't know. By the way, I feel like, when a franchise moves, coaches get fucked. I mean, it's like Bill Belichick. Guys, I'm going to say the book The War Room, I think it's by Michael Holly, a great book. It talks about Bill Belichick. It talks about his entire coaching tree, Nick Saban, Mangini, the GM of the Atlanta Falcons, Dimitroff, was like basically painting lines for Cleveland. He was a part-time scout and part-time groundskeeper for the Cleveland Browns. But when the Cleveland Browns, it's like people think that Belichick failed in Cleveland. Belichick didn't so much fail in Cleveland because he took him to the playoffs. But then remember, Cleveland ripped itself up and moved to Baltimore. Like, and when they did that,
then won a Super Bowl.
But they also ripped up. Like, Belichick got ripped up out of that. Like, it was like he was the last coach of the Cleveland Browns, and when they moved, they let him go and they hired someone else. It's like in some ways, like Jeff Fisher making the transplant, their expectation. It's like, really, if you're Jeff Fisher. I really have empathy for the man.
Because, mind you, recently just come from Tennessee, so it's not like he's like this long tenured.
Right, but I'm saying it's like you're in a head coach, and if any NFL head coach or GM is listening, don't do hard knocks. Don't do hard knocks. Yes. Don't do hard knocks. It messes up your franchise. By the way, the Houston Texans 2 years ago.
The anomaly.
They were the anomaly to actually bump into the playoffs because the AFC South is so terrible, but it's like it messes up your head. And Jeff Fisher, it's like, look, man, it's like he was going, I'm gonna bench the kid. I'm going to grow the kid. I'm going to mature the kid. It's like Dak Prescott's getting pressed into service. Carson Wentz starting opening day when they're going to, by the way, a week before, I mean, at least Dak Prescott, he knew Romo was hurt and I had to go in. I mean, that made sense. We're just going to trade Sam Bradford and Carson Wentz is now your starter. And these guys go into service, and then Brissett goes into service. I mean, for the week three, the Patriots got their fucking rookie in. It's a great year for rookie quarterbacks. And there's Goff just sitting on the sidelines holding a clipboard. And it's like, if you knew you were going to get fired, Jeff Fisher, wouldn't you just throw the kid to the line?
At least trying to sabotage the season.
But it's like what's his name? I can't even remember the guy who's acting. Casey Keenum.
Keenum,
right?
The backup, yeah.
Right, no, he's the starter.
Or Casey Keenum is a backup.
Jeff Fisher hitched his wagon to Keenum. That's when you go like, hey, man, why don't I should throw the kid to the Lions. I mean, by the way, if you knew you were going to get fired, wouldn't you just put him in?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because why? What was I hold? I don't really, in that sense, if he's great, I look like a genius. But if he sucks, it's like, hey, man, I tried to develop the kid. You may have actually, like, what Fisher did may long-term help the Los Angeles Rams. But he won't get any credit for it.
No, now I think Jeff Fisher looks horrible. Jeff Fisher now is the guest that comes over to the house that's, like, just walked in from when it's raining. And you're like, welcome. But in NFL circles, everyone's like, I don't want you to sit down on my couch. You're wet, you know? Like, he's just tainted now. I feel like he really just got nothing out of the Rams, especially because they started off defensively. They looked like they were going to have a team.
All I can tell you is, look, we all love Gurley. I love Gurley in college. I loved him his rookie season. But there was something, I just got to say this. If it's in the current day NFL, when you're going into the season and you're talking about your number one thing is your running game, you're not good. Because I got to be honest with you. Let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks won a Super Bowl and lost a Super Bowl, and they had beast mode during that entire time. But during that entire time, I would also put to you that their running game, as great as it was,
is still vastly underrated by the media and
third
in general.
Page. It's defense one, and then Russell Wilson, when he emerged, that became the second storyline.
Yeah, but it's like, in some ways, it's like Russell Wilson isn't necessarily, like, look, Tom Brady wins his first Super Bowl, and Ben Roethlisberger wins.
Russell Wilson is Trent Dilfer.
Tom Brady's first Super Bowl is a game manager, as is maybe Ben Roethlisberger's first win, and they grow into the record-setting quarterbacks that they are to become Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And Russell Wilson, but it was a weird thing where Beast Mode was so good, but also we don't just talk about running it. We just don't talk about running it. It's like, look, because look, Ezekiel Elliott is what makes Dallas really run, but we're actually more impressed with Dak Prescott replacing Tony Romo.
And lost in all of that is how incredible their offensive line is. Really.
But that's always, by the way, that's always the story in Dallas, because it's like, as Brett Ernst or any of our Dallas Cowboy, Sean Halpern, any of our Dallas Cowboy fans could tell you, it's like, you know, the line that won, that went 1-15 was the same line that ran for, it's like they build this line, and sometimes they have down years, and then it's there. Which happens, which, by the way, is another reason why Kansas City Chiefs fans, don't get worried about Andy Reid. I don't know.
Love Andy Reid. Don't hate him.
Yeah,
there's,
I know.
There's nothing
He's
better
great.
Out there.
You're building something. And by the way, that's a thing where you just keep adding pieces. Like, look, Alex Smith is pretty good. But there also might be a Dak Prescott or, somebody who's a bigger, better thing that comes in and fate Tom Brady's him into your Drew Bledsoe. The thing that makes me the maddest is that I can't be mad at Dak Prescott. I can't hate the, because he is Tom Brady. He's doing the Tom Brady thing.
And what seems like a lot of successful quarterbacks in the NFL do, they back into a starting role, take full advantage of it.
Which Tony Romo Russell did. Wilson, he's a backup quarterback. That's the name of the game.
But, all right, let's go to break here real quick. Yep. When we come back, we'll wrap it down. On the land or on the sea, what can you learn to fly, play in sports or skin dive, study oceanography? Sign up for the big band or sit in the grandstand when your team and others meet. In the Navy, yes, you can sail the seven seas. In the Navy, yes, you can put your mind at ease. And on a sadder note here, before we get out of here, this episode 128, which has been a lot of fun. It's, dude, the face-to-face thing, I think, setting up the schedule and us both being in town for more than 2 weeks at a time.
I got to tell you, Sheezer, I was so looking forward for a Sportsaholics Chiefs-Patriots AFC Championship. I was really... Let's do it next year. Okay?
Yeah, no, I'm down for it.
Because I'd like to say that, because then it would be 7 AFC championships in a row for Belichick and Brady. Because I'm about that. I'm about just adding pearls to the necklace.
Which, you know who else was about adding pearls in the height of their prime? Would have probably been the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Ten bells. Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus. They're shutting it. The greatest
years.
Show on earth. Not the greatest show on turf, beaten by the Patriots. I'm saying the actual, what they made the parody of, the greatest show on earth, which I saw when I was a kid. I saw Gunther Gamble Williams, who did the Lions, the Tigers, the Leopards, whatever.
I saw Barnum and Bailey, I believe, at a municipal auditorium in downtown Kansas City. What would have been?
I saw him at the Boston Garden.
Really?
I saw him at the Boston Garden.
That's a legend. Yeah. That's two legends in one place. As a kid, even ventured as far as Baraboo, Wisconsin, the home of the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Really?
Did the tour of the whole
museum. Circus folk.
It was this weird thing. So it's like, it's sad, and it's PETA loves it, because they're so.
I know. It is an end of an era. 146 years is. It's like there is a certain point where we live in this day and age where, like, Tillamook, the blackfish from SeaWorld, recently passed.
That's right. The murderer.
And so it's like there's a certain point where, like, SeaWorld maybe zoos, circuses. It's like, you know, I went to another circus that wasn't the Ringling Brothers a couple years ago, and they had recently gone animalless. They were no way.
If you're a human and you want to die swinging through the air, be a trapeze.
Yeah,
that's
they
cool.
were still doing that, right? They were doing like cycles of death, and I mean, here's what happened: a bunch of comics took mushrooms and decided to go to the circus.
Some of the best pictures.
Vargas,
by the way,
it's Circus Vargas. I've that's where we seen. Went to. Yeah, yeah, it was a good time.
Of you guys, not Circus the Vargas, circus, but the photos of these guys.
But here's the thing:
tripping
you
on
go
mushrooms,
to a circus, it has no faces. Animals. They've recently just we were all on mushrooms, but they've recently. This season was the first season that Circus Vargas, no animals, no lions, no tigers, no elephants, no whatevers, nothing. They just doing motorcycle tricks and clowns and crazy attractions, and they're amazing, and they are amazing, and it's a great circus, and I recommend Circus Vargas, especially if you're on mushrooms, okay? But here's the thing. There are no elephants or animals of any kind in this circus, but here's the thing. It's a big top circus. Like they go and they construct this big top like on football fields or whatever. And I'm going to tell you this, the whole big top still smells of elephant. It just still smells like even though there aren't any elephants and no animals are being hurt during this circus, I'm telling you, your nose is going to tell you there's elephant, whatever. There is elephant and tiger.
You can take the elephant out of the circus, but
you
can't
take the elephant out of the tent.
You
is
can't
what I'm
take
saying.
The
wow,
smell.
That's
a good, 40, 100, or
so, man,
nearly
Ringling
15
Brothers,
decades.
It's a million era.
It's yeah, sad. No, it's sad. The problem is, you know, in 1906, a couple elephants standing on each other. It's like, wow, holy crap. It's like, but 2006.
By the way, think about that. Remember, by the way, in 1904, 1906, think about how great just an elephant was. Like, no, a circus comes to town. An elephant. And by the way, think about this. The logo of both the Oakland Athletics, who were originally the Philadelphia Athletics, who were in Kansas City.
Also the Kansas City Athletics.
Is an elephant. And the Crimson Tide, recently in the national championship game, Crimson Tide is an elephant because an elephant. The Grand Ole Party, what is their symbol? An elephant because an elephant. Well, first of all, I mean 100%. You know, Horton hears a who. But what I'm saying is an elephant was this amazing foreign creature, and the circus brought
captivated
it to
that. Brought it to Waterloo,
and that is
Iowa.
Another boy. Generation ago. That is 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's
that
five.
Is now becoming like our grandchildren will think circuses are like the Patriot tri-corner hat. Like, why did you wear a hat that didn't like it didn't keep the sun out of your eyes? Like, why do the people
rain?
Look, yeah, yeah. Why
they'll look back at circuses like we do as like a court gesture back in the 14th century.
Yes, and you
like,
did oh. what? You traveled around and you made animals jump through hoops
yeah,
of fire?
We'd have tigers and they wouldn't attack us. They're like, okay, that sounds pretty boring,
right. We danced with bears.
It was
and
huge. You
should have
been there in 1919, right
that
after.
That Dumbo. But right sometimes Dumbo might not make sense anymore. Like, people won't know what circuses are.
It'll be like, Mom, why were all the animals in boxes? It sounds mean when you say it like that, but they fed them and bathed
them. We need
them.
Free range circuses.
I think that's just what everyone just that isn't that just Nebraska really or Texas? It's just a big free range circus.
I'm not gonna attack Nebraska after we already did Lawrenceville.
Yes, that's true. So that sadly is coming to an end.
Sorry, greatest show on earth. Ooh, thank you for 146 years.
Good news if you're Oregon Ducks fans. Your football team went 4-7 last year, which is horrible, especially if you're going to
especially
win.
Since your old head coach, who's a legend, Chip Kelly, is now interviewing for the Jacksonville Jaguars offensive coordinator,
which will be his third team in 5 years in the NFL. But
I don't think San Francisco should not have fired Jeff Kelly. That's a problem. By the way, there's a problem with ownership with the GM. Like they don't have a blend yet. That ownership, you got to have ownership, management, and coaching all working together. Everyone's gonna march to the same beat, bro. Like these things, you can really look at them as a much more systemic. Like, well, anyway, I live with the Patriots. Do your job, Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, top to bottom, number one franchise.
Oregon's done a great job. I mean, they were nothing for years. But you can't wear those obnoxious uniforms and be 4-7. It just as a football fan, I can't digest it.
I know, because by the way, it's almost like the Venom costume from Spider-Man, because those outrageous outfits
have left, or you know what I mean? Like, I know that Oregon still wears them, but now we're watching it's Louisville, baby.
Maryland.
Like, I'm watching. Oh, the Maryland ones are terrible.
Oh, dude, KU had some horrible ones because now it's Adidas, Nike. Everyone's getting
look,
in.
Let's just say this. Kansas Jayhawks, and by the way, great respect to Kansas University, but let's just be honest. Your football team is like Duke football team. It's like, you guys have football? Like,
no, it's
every time I see a Jayhawk on a helmet, I'm like, oh, yeah, Kansas football.
And like, they've had decent defensive players. I mean,
but also, by the way, your Kansas State football helmet colors.
The purple and silver.
It doesn't quite make sense. Like, that doesn't seem natural.
I don't understand.
Like something out of a movie. Like, it seems like a fictional NFL
yeah.
team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That should have been a team they were playing against
in any given Sunday. Yeah. It's like that doesn't actually exist. That's a running man helmet.
Yeah, that's very definitely designed.
Every time I see the Kansas State, it's like there's nothing organic. There's nothing that says.
I think it used to be white and purple.
Nothing says Kansas State. Somehow is completely unrelated, and I don't mean any disrespect to Kansas State fans, because it's a tremendous.
I'm curious about the purple. I don't know if maybe there's some purple, like fields
silver,
of purple flowers
just,
around
I mean,
there, maybe, or Manhattan.
It's like if I had to test you between the Michigan Panthers helmet of the USFL, the first champions of the USFL, and. You know, which is a gold helmet with a panther, and the Kansas State. It's crazy. I just believe in some world that Kansas State helmet doesn't really exist.
Well, maybe they need to start with the helmet there, but to just shape up. Well, unfortunately, their old coach is probably due to retire. Bill Snyder again for the second time here, but Oregon, look. Good things are coming. I mean, look, three of your players this past week were sent to the hospital.
Great.
All linemen after conditioning drills. So that due to Willie Taggart, new head coach there, came from Florida Southern or Southern Florida. So clearly he's instilling a new, harder, more demanding,
rigorous
workout. And this is in January. So
Wearing those Nike shoes like pre.
That's results right there. And nobody hates the coach change, you know, because everyone's favorite is now everyone's – like I remember in high school, sophomore year, Stu Ordman, coach, left for Davenport, left Kansas City to go
How
coach.
How dare he?
Family was close to Chicago and loved talking about Chicago hoops. Like he would gather everybody around, like everyone get in here. And we do like the semicircle. But if anyone was standing behind him, he'd turn around real quick and remind you that he grew up playing basketball in the mean streets of Chicago. So nobody better stand behind him because he's just not going to be comfortable with it.
Yeah, yeah. But the same way about mafia hits.
Good coach, but he rubbed like all the really talented good players the wrong way. And so none of our like best athletes really played basketball for him. And he would take everybody else and mold them into basketball players.
Oh, that's an interesting thing.
And so he left after my sophomore year. And I remember just the jubilation of the joy of everyone that could dunk a basketball in our high school now, because now they could try out for the basketball team again. We immediately.
It's like when Tommy Morris got fired from the Comedy Store.
Very similar to that, you know? It was just like, but everyone was thrilled. So hopefully, Oregon Ducks, you can rebound and, you know, become. Competitive.
What's next on that list, Cheese?
The next on that list, real quick, wanted to give a huge congratulations to former Royals general manager and current Braves president, former Braves general manager, Mr. Schuerholz, for being elected into
Hall of Fame.
National Baseball League Hall of Fame this year.
By the way, we should talk more about our Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame.
The Hall of Fame of Hall of Fame. I haven't had anything to induct. We could definitely induct a third or a sixth straight AFC championship game into the Hall of Fame Sports of
Fox. Well, six AFC championships in a row is definitely in the Hall of Fame of the Hall of Fame.
But Schuerholz joined the Royals originally when they became an expansion team after spending 2 years with Lou Gorman with the Orioles, who came over with the Royals.
I read that book, man.
Of course, we discussed with legendary scout Art Stewart
way back when. One of our all-time greatest.
Episode, I think, 35, 80-something, and then we've had him on a couple times over the years. And so he brings two division championships to Kansas City, obviously the World Series in 85, signed to a lifetime contract by Ewing Kauffman and the Royals.
It sounds like slavery, Cheese.
And was so high on the hog, very similar to where you're at now. Like, he's like, I've done it all with the Royals. So he then moves to the Braves, who were horrendous during the 80s, and proceeds to, from 1991 to 2005, go to 15 straight post Major League Baseball postseasons, only winning
now, see, that's,
one
by
World
the way,
Series.
By, right, okay, now that's exactly the point. That is the point for this whole episode. John Cheryl, the Atlanta Braves, it's like, you know what? They only won one World Series, and many people see that as some sort of deficiency or knock. But it's like, remember, some of the greatest athletes that we know in sports, Dan Marino, Charles Barkley, no rings at all, right? And I think it was Bill Parcells who said something about baseball. He was the guy that started talking about like the playoffs as like a tournament. It's like, look, man, what you want, like, as a fan, what I want to be in the playoffs. I want to have a shot. And so as a GM with the Atlanta Braves, this guy, this man, put the Atlanta Braves, he assembled one of the greatest pitching staffs
of all time.
Right.
And hell, then, he had a one-handed pitcher,
and he
for
was
God's
also
sakes.
One of those guys that, like, he was that guy that, like, okay, David Justice, Fred McGriff, I could have Otis Nixon, like, you know what I'm saying? He was that guy that could
Grissom,
sub in
Marquise Grissom, was
right?
Out
but
there.
I mean, I could sub in this outfielder or that outfielder. I could sort of change on the fly.
David Justice,
and he was. It's like in some ways before sabermetrics, we were really aware of the Moneyball world. It was like he was kind of finding that guy. Like, oh yeah, I don't need to have pay David Justice if I can have Otis Nixon give me a lot of the same numbers.
And look, it still resonates with the Royals because. Dayton
but
Moore.
That's what you're saying. It's like I put, but he, what this guy did is he put them in contention 14 years.
They wouldn't
in a
even
row.
Sell out. They weren't selling off playoff games. Like they wouldn't
no,
sell
it's
out.
It's crazy.
The
Atlanta,
that's how
like
common.
Atlanta, and they, by the way, they're moving stadiums because they can't deal with their own fan base. Because
oh yeah, that's right. They have a new Turner Field that opened.
There's a
up
weird part of
year.
Like just acceptance of like you know. Hey, look, I'll be honest with you. Like I lived in a world where it was the 80s. The Celtics, it was springtime. The Celtics are going to be in the playoffs. Like, that's just going to happen. And then sometimes there is fan apathy. And then you realize, like, and that's, you know, things peak and fall off. And that's why it's amazing that it's like Belichick and Brady. It's like they're still doing it. They're still doing it.
And they can do it for four
because
more years.
Because, by the way, here's the thing, everyone, before we leave tonight, the question is greatest quarterback of all time, Montana. Marino, John Elway, Peyton Manning. Guess what? Tom Brady, 4 Super Bowls, 6 appearances, 11 or 12 AFC Championship games. But here's the most important thing I'm going to say to you. Still playing. He's still playing. Joe Montana would change lives with Tom Brady right now. Because he's married to Gisele Bündchen and Bridget Moynihan is his baby's mama. I'm saying you can't even abort Tom Brady. If Tom Brady impregnates you, you're going to have that baby because it's... I'll leave
it's Tom Brady. It's, and plus, you might have a... I hope we construct some sort of rival Manning camp where he can bring in his children.
It is like Team Edward versus Team Jacob, and I've never seen any of those movies to know what that reference means.
Okay. Listeners,
you done with this show?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. I just want to hit it with the whistle right now.
Or? I got it.
Okay, you got it? Okay. Was going to say, like Kevin, if you guys live, we're looking for correspondence to do just weekly, bi-weekly.
Oh, my God. We would love to have a report
but
from
me,
where you
like
are.
Like Southern Florida. I really like the East Coast, the Carolinas.
What's your obsession with sports? You're a sportsaholic. Let's talk about it.
You know, but just someone preferably... Obviously, if you're listening, you have a passion for sports, but just some insight and just like some stories locally that we're glossing over here on a national level. So if you're interested in doing that, and that can also be pre-recorded and just emailed or sent to us, it's really actually fairly simple, but we can get into that later. Just
fairly simple.
Reach out to us
talking
on Twitter
technical.
At Sportsaholics and just go ahead and just tag yourself in the post and then we'll get back to you. Again, real quick, if you're in San Diego, go to Don Carlos Taco Shop on Pearl Street, in La Jolla, Caddy Corner.
Home of the Padres, not the Chargers.
It was really cool. Don Carlos this week is still doing it. If you're in San Diego, you have anything San Diego Chargers,
you can turn in Charger.
It has to say San Diego on it. You can turn in a jacket,
It has to say San Diego?
Yep. Or because they have a bunch of stuff that just says Chargers that doesn't say San Diego on it.
You can't charge too bad.
But
okay.
If you bring in a jacket, I'm sure he would take it. But you get a free burrito, and they're amazing. So if you have an old Chargers jacket, you want to bring
it. I wish I had that burrito right now.
Go in and get it. And then, of course, go to Union Press KC. If you need a shirt printed up, they'll design it for you. Great guys. Union Press KC.
Like a no.